I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit with the guys at the barbershop. Sitting in the chairs for their shape-up this week are opinion writer and blogger Jimmy Israel, Lester Spence, who's an assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. Let's see. I hear that they want to talk about fair trials for ex-Klansmen, a college student who lied to avoid being sent to Iraq, and remember that love triangle at NASA? And of course they have something to say about Kobe. I may jump in, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, fellas, what's up? Welcome to the shop.
Hey, what's happening, man?
Hey.
Yeah, let's jump right in, and let's talk about the ex-Klansman James Ford Seal going on trial for the 43-year-old murder of two young black men in Mississippi. Now, some say this is justice deferred, but you know what? I don't know if justice deferred is still justice, and others still say it's politically motivated. A-Train, you're the JD in the house. Bust it.
Man, it's justice deferred. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it happens 43 minutes or 43 years after the murder happens, but, you know, the families of these victims deserve the justice that they've been long awaiting.
What good does it do, Ruben? I mean, you know, it's 43 years after the fact.
Right. It does a lot of good because, you know, you're setting the record straight here. There's no statute of limitations on murder. If anything, it sort of tells people in this generation, gives them a little slice of our history, lets them know what was going on back then. You know, but I've also picked up on this other case. It's wild. This is almost sort of the photo negative, but there's this case out of San Francisco where the defendant in that case was an African-American. It's actually two African-American gentlemen, 157, one in his 60s now, right? Richard Brown and Richard O'Neill, and they're charged with killing a cop back in the 70s.
Oh,
and
wow.
So it's sort of the reverse there. A lot of folks in the black community in San Francisco saying, well, you know, why are you busting on these two guys? And from my perspective, you got to play the game by one set of rules. I don't care whether the defendant is black, white, or purple.
Absolutely.
If they did a murder or allegedly committed a murder, you know, 30 years ago, they got to pay for it today.
Yeah, Ruben, that's cool. But you know, Lester, what always trips me out is these cases always seem to come up in a really politically charged atmosphere. And I don't know if that's an accident.
I think for me, what it really is you got a country that basically for well over 200 years was a terrorist state. Like 250
right.
years, 260 years was explicitly terrorist. And this is one of the cases in which a case of in which an instance of internal terrorism was dealt with. And I don't care about the politics as long as homeboy gets what he deserves, if you feel me.
And A-Train, yo, what does he deserve? What's going to come out of this?
I mean, if you look at, I mean, the guy's an old guy. He's on his last legs anyway.
He's like 150.
Absolutely. I mean, so, I mean.
He's like 71.
But that's
still,
what I said.
I get you.
No offense to our octogenarian listeners out there, but, you know.
Grandma.
You got to call a spade a spade. You know, murder is murder, and there's a reason that there's no statute of limitations on murder because, you know, it is the most heinous crime that can be committed, and it's just wrong, and, you know, they deserve it.
Can I ask the attorney here a question? Do you think you can get a fair trial after 43 years?
I think so. I think, you know, obviously if you look at it, as opposed to being front page headlines, you know, when there's 43 years that have passed since your crime, you know, you're probably not going to get a lot of people who remember all the, you know, positive or negative media coverage of it.
I think actually it's more likely he'll get a fair trial.
Right.
Because if you remember, black people weren't able to serve on juries.
That's a good point.
I'm out. Carry on.
Okay, well, you know, thanks for stopping in, Michelle. And, you know, for me, this is the kind of thing that cries out for creative sentencing as opposed to, like, cheap seat melodrama. But that's just my opinion. But speaking of politics, now let's talk about something that's kind of slipping below the radar lightweight. Now, you got these two young brothers at Morgan State, and they asked a friend to shoot them in the leg so they didn't have to go to Iraq. Now, wait a second.
Man.
Lester, you're a Q. Why haven't we heard about this? What's up with that?
Well, I don't know why. Well, I heard about it because they tried to blame my fraternity brothers on it first.
What fraternity was it?
Omega Psi Phi, the Pi chapter of Omega Psi Phi. That's the fraternity I've been in since 1989. I knew it was shaky because the thing is even in your worst case scenario where you've got illegal hazing going on, there's no type of illegal hazing that somebody tried to escape from getting shot in the leg.
Ruben, has it come to the point where, you know, young men feel like they got to do, like, Nancy Kerrigan, Tanya Harding techniques, you know, to avoid, you know, going overseas?
No.
Has it come to this?
It's crazy. I mean, this is like the ultimate social political commentary. This is a message to the White House. You know, our folks are desperate. Get out of Iraq. obviously what these young men are. They're very intelligent. You know, they know how to tell a good lie and spin a good tale. They need to be using their powers for good. You know, if they could, we could send them to Iraq, that might be helpful in the war effort.
Yo, A-Train busted.
Well, I just think that it obviously, you know, it highlights the absurdity of the Iraq war when knuckleheads go shooting themselves in the back of the legs trying to get themselves
out
of a war.
Wait, we can't call, I don't know if I want to call them knuckleheads.
Well, if they did it on I'm sorry, if they did it on purpose, I mean, if I shot myself in the back of the leg or I told one of my homeboys to shoot me in the back of the leg, I would want all y'all to call me a knucklehead.
Yeah, I think that's what
I mean. If it comes down to going to Iraq and you shoot me in the back of the leg, A-Train, I hold still, you know, and you know, and you aim, but make sure your aim is true, bro.
Oh, absolutely. No, real talk. No, it shows the true friendship.
For me, I can understand not wanting to go, but this move is pretty desperate. But speaking of desperate, can we move on and talk about the male astronaut who had a woman driving cross country in a diaper?
Oh, man.
You know, he's being reassigned a desk job, according to a lot of reports. Commander Bill Oliphant went from Mac and lightweight to manning a desk for the Navy.
Oh,
now, wait a second. What was the best case scenario, Lester? I mean, you know, you got to get your play and your paycheck in two different places. That's what my grandma used to say. she still says it quiet is kept.
You know, he violated all types of rules. You know, when I grew up, I used to want to be an astronaut. And this is the other side of it. So these guys are really, really, really focused, and part of them is really, really crazy if you really think about what they do. And this is homegirl just taking that level of craziness to another degree.
A-Train, it just sounded like love to me. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've had women come across town.
Exactly.
You know,
that's what I was going to say. What kind of loving do you have to be given to make a grown woman who's a rocket scientist drive 9 hours...
With a diaper on, man.
I can't match that.
I can't match that.
That's pretty serious.
I've gotten a birthday card before. I mean, you know, I don't have cross-country diaper trips going on.
You say you've gotten a birthday card before.
I mean...
What were his options ever?
It just gave such a bad name to the astronauts. I think NASA just had to sort of take one for the team and shift the guy. I mean, it was just it gave the whole program a bad name.
I think this is
Ruben,
the best case scenario. He still got a job. He still gets a paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
Ruben, what do you say?
Yeah, I don't think he'll miss NASA or NASA will miss him or the rest of us will miss the story.
Yeah, you're right about that, man. Well, moving on, let's talk about sports.
Can I just say, Jimmy will miss it. He's obsessed with this astronaut and the whole, I don't know why, I'm just saying, that's all I want to say.
I just want to know what the recipe is. I mean, I can't get a woman to pick me up to the airport much
I don't want that recipe.
Come across
the country
in a diaper.
In a diaper.
Moving on, let's talk sports. And Lester, your boy Kobe is flip-flopping like John Kerry. What's wrong with your boy? You know, one minute he's talking about, get me out of L.A., I can't stand it here. And the next minute he's talking about, well, I guess I'll hang out a while. They'll figure it out. What's going on with
Kobe? Hey, man, Kobe's my man. But the thing is he wanted, when Shaq left, he wanted the challenge of taking a team on his own, just like Michael Jordan. Well, Michael Jordan had Pippen, but you know what I'm saying. And this is the other side of that. You know, the other side of that is going through three straight years without a playoff victory. This is the other side, and he needs to just... I mean, if he's going to make moves, he needs to be more discreet in the moves he wants to make. Because as it stands, he looks like a chump, even though he's my
Ruben,
boy.
What does this say about his maturity as a man and as a player to kind of have this thing out on sports radio?
You know, unfortunately, it doesn't say much about his maturity level or his regard for his team or just anybody but Kobe. Because this was a flip-flop that occurred just in the course of a few hours. He gave one radio interview in the morning where he said, I want to be traded. And then just a few hours later, on a different radio show, after he had spoken to the coach, to Phil Jackson, he said, well, I changed my mind. I'm going to stay and retire a Laker. The main takeaway for me and what I've been hearing from sports writers in the last 24 hours or so is this is more evidence of just this incredible ego. And it's okay to be good at what you do, but you also have to respect the dynamics of the team. Someone like a Jordan transcends just his own ability, and he brings people together. And
no,
Kobe's
not
bringing anybody together.
Well, Jordan did. When did Jordan bring people together? Jordan was smacking people around in practice. Did you know he was smacking people around in practice?
You cannot build a team around a guy like this.
Well, no, and I completely agree, Ruben.
Go ahead, A-Train. Bust it.
To me, Kobe Bryant is the NBA's version of Paris Hilton. Honestly, if you look at it, after the whole Colorado debacle, he should have learned not to air his dirty laundry in public. 7-year, $136 million contract, which is more than the GDP of the Marshall Islands.
That's not right.
And, you know, you're going to be a prima donna and,
wait a
and
second.
Not even
No. I mean, because he took at least one for the team. So when everybody was blaming him for Shaq leaving, he kept it quiet for, like, how many years? Until yesterday that it was Buss who wanted Shaq gone? It was Buss.
Buss who? But you mean you talking about Busta Bus, Busta Rhyme, Busta who?
Jerry Bus, the president.
I'm sorry, Jerry Bus, the owner of the Lakers. Told him that under no circumstances would Shaq be coming back. Kobe's got talent. Kobe is the best individual player in the team. I mean, in the league.
Either way you go, it sounds like a troubled marriage. You know, what's the solution? Well, you get the last word on this, A-Train.
I mean, he's going to be traded. I mean, he's already talked about going to my hometown Chicago Bulls, and I don't even know if they could handle him there. So,
well, I mean, he can't be traded anytime soon. He's got 4 years left.
Yeah, but he can opt out of. He has a trade out clause in his contract, but they'd have to buy out an $89 million contract. You know, so the Marshall Islands will have to wait for a while.
Speaking of people on the outs, let's talk about the cat fighting on The View. Now, I don't know about the rest of you. I'm at work when The View is on. But from what I hear, Rosie O'Donnell got into it with Elizabeth Hasselbeck about politics. Now, Ruben, you know, why do people even care what these ladies have to say?
I know. I'm in there. I care about it. It's weird. I can't, you know, it's like a car wreck. I can't look away. and the reason I was interested in it is because people started saying that this is unscripted television. They began to say that virtually everything else on television, even these reality shows, seems sometimes so scripted. But this was just spontaneous. Two people, the camera running, they don't like each other, and it just all comes out. And people couldn't get enough of it. People couldn't look away. So I think sort of, in a weird way, it's sort of a commentary on where our television is right now and what we're hungry for. And that's sort of a spontaneity, an honesty. We don't get it from our politicians. We don't get it from our media. And we got it from these two. They just don't like each other, and they let it have it.
Lester, do you care, Lester?
No, on one level, I don't, in that I would much prefer to have somebody with some expertise talk about politics than somebody with no expertise. Like, I wouldn't want a janitor telling me what I need to do, you know, if I got a heart problem, right? But at the same time, I actually wish that there were more arguments like this, because everybody's got politics, right? So we kind of privatize politics and say, well, I don't want to talk about that. Let's leave that to the side. You know, we don't want to air that type of stuff. We actually need more of that than less. I just wish that there was a way to keep that type of tension on the show. You know what I mean? And just manage it a different way. But we all need those type of arguments.
So you're kind of advocating for, like, roller derby punditry.
I'm not advocating smacking people around. But that's what it's getting to.
I mean, A-Train, I mean, jump in here, man. I mean, you don't see that?
No, I mean, well, the thing is, you got to have substance to it. I mean, you know, Elizabeth Hasselbeck was brought in as the pretty blonde conservative Republican, and Rosie O'Donnell has always been sort of the, you know, abrasive, loudmouth liberal. And it came to a head. I mean, you know, it was a shouting match. If you actually looked at the transcript of what was said, there was really little of substance that was said. It's just feeding off the sensationalistic nature of our society and where, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. You know, or Bill O'Reilly is the highest-rated cable news show on TV because he starts yelling at people.
And why Kobe makes the front news.
That's right.
Here we go.
Instead of San Antonio going to the championship.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's going to be the last word, gentlemen. I want to thank everybody for coming to the shop. You know, Ruben, you know, it's good to have you back.
Thank you.
Lester, my man.
You know how we do.
A-Train, you know we're going to have you back, bro.
Anytime, dog. Anytime.
And, you know, I'm just going to turn it over to the one woman I never have really any arguments with, Michelle Martin.
That's right, because you know who's rocking the mic. All right, Jimmy, thank you so much. Jimmy Israel joined us from the Public Radio Partnership Studios in Louisville, Kentucky. He writes for the opinion page of the Lexington Herald Leader. Ruben Navarrete joined us from KPBS in San Diego. He writes for the San Diego Union Tribune and CNN.com. Arsalan Iftikhar is the National Legal Director of the Council on American Islamic Relations. He joined us from our studios here in Washington. Hey, Arsalan, thanks for sitting in. And Dr. Lester Spence is an Assistant Professor of Political Science at Johns Hopkins University. He joined us from his office in Baltimore. You can find links to all of our barbershop guests at our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having
us.
Thank
you.
Yep, yep.